Okay, obviously today we're talking about favoritism. We're talking about when we treat different people different ways. Have you ever felt like an outsider? Like the one who is kind of stuck on the outside of any group, really? Felt like the person that was not included, the person on the outside looking in, the person who was kind of excluded. I have a friend who talks about kind of in their adolescent years really being a loner. I mean, this person talks about what life was like for her, never being in the in crowd, never being really considered cool, never being invited to go to parties, never really knowing the inside jokes. And whenever she would try to break out of her shell and talk to somebody, the response was usually kind of this condescending little smile and then a cold shoulder, which made her just become that much more of a loner. Now, I mean, we've all known people like that, probably in school, the person who kind of generally ate lunch by themselves. And what do we do with the loner? Usually we leave them alone, right? But my friend talks about the incredible pain she felt at so badly wanting to be included, but never being let in the circle, whatever the circle was. Let's just be honest. It's so natural to pay attention to the people who we like. It's pretty natural. It's easy. It's easy to like people that are kind of like us. It's hard to love the people who aren't. I knew a youth pastor who, a guy I met at seminary, and he told this really cool story. He talked about when he was in high school. I mean, this was one of those kids who in high school knew what his life was going to be. He was going to be in ministry and be in youth ministry for the rest of his life. He knew the Bible. He was in a small group. He had a mentor, and he was at church all the time. He knew everything. He was the kind of kid that other moms, like, looked at his mom with, like, evil looks, you know, like, oh, you're so lucky. Great, great kid. So one day, this kid, my buddy, is going on the weekend youth group ski trip. And he's kind of the student leader, the core kid, you know, in that youth group. And at the last minute, the cutest girl in school decides she's going to go on the ski trip too. And she's not a part of the church. She doesn't go to the youth group. But she decides she's going to go on the trip. And so my buddy says that he basically, from that moment on, spent every waking second fawning on, flirting with, paying attention to that girl the whole weekend. He said, it was great. I'm just, you know, this girl I've dreamed of getting to know, and here she's like captive audience. And so he spends the whole weekend with her. Well, the trip comes to a close, and they're getting in the bus to drive back to their church. And my buddy says that his youth pastor grabs him by the arm as he's getting on the bus and says, hey, come here, I want to talk to you. And they kind of walk off to the side. And this is what he says, his youth pastor says to him, I am so disappointed in you. You just spent a whole weekend paying attention to the one girl who gets more attention than anybody else on this trip, and you didn't say one word to the kid who doesn't have a single friend. I expected more. Whew, he told me that story. And you know what? Instantly, my heart broke because I knew I spent my day, every day, doing that exact same thing. Loving the lovely and ignoring the lonely. But it's just so easy to pay attention to those who attract our attention. And you know what? It's so painful to be the one who doesn't attract attention. So this morning, we're going to be looking at what James says about that very thing. He basically says, as believers in Jesus Christ, don't show favoritism. Three short words, should be pretty easy. But maybe we should start by defining what is favoritism? I mean, what does James really mean by favoritism? Don't show favoritism. I asked some folks, let me start with what James says about it. James paints a picture, and this was kind of an enactment of what James describes. In the early church, the church that James is writing this letter to, what happened is, when they gathered together, the people of influence, the people who mattered in society, the people who had money and significance, they got special seats. Now, they didn't really, this is kind of, we don't really know because they didn't make videos of their worship services, but they didn't really gather together just to sing songs. They usually gathered together for communion, for the Lord's Supper. And so really, this was kind of a meal setting when they got together. And so at this table, the people of influence got the best seats. And you know what? They also got the best food. And then the people who didn't really matter, literally, they got seats on the floor. I mean, they gathered in people's homes for the most part. And so you can kind of picture it, you know? The important people are seated around the table, and all the little people were kind of scattered wherever they could find a seat. And I sometimes wonder if it's not too far from that. Hey, would you guys back up a little bit, make some room for the important people? James flat out says this is wrong. In fact, a little later in James, he compares that kind of favoritism with murder and adultery. Same thing, he says. Well, those are some harsh words. Well, I don't know, that doesn't really seem like, you know, an experience that we have in our church. So I asked some folks from our congregation to share their experiences of favoritism, and I got some pretty cool responses. A lot of people admitted to judging people based on their appearance. One person actually confessed to, you know, trying to avoid a particular salesperson in a department store that didn't really look like she might know that much about fashion. But after not being able to find another sales associate, kind of walks up to this person, and turns out it's this amazingly helpful and kind and knowledgeable person. You ever had an experience like that where your first impression of judgment and favoritism just turns out to be dead wrong? Some other people told stories about making fun of people who were a little lower on the social ladder than you. In fact, one person made this profound point that no matter how low you are on the social ladder, if there's somebody below you, you're going to judge and show favoritism against that person. That really is profound. The flip side of that is no matter how high you climb on the social ladder, there's still going to be somebody above you looking down and scoffing. Well, what's fascinating to me about this passage is that James says favoritism is really judgment. That's it. It's judging other people. And he says the opposite of judgment, the other end of how we treat people from judgment is, and this surprises me, mercy. Mercy. What a loaded word. I remember playing the game of mercy as a kid where you'd lock arms, you know, you'd lock hands like this, and then you'd try to bend each other's arms until the other person cries out, literally says, mercy. And when you say mercy, the other person is supposed to stop. And usually they did. But I remember the one, you know, the really strong kid would say, what? What? Say it louder. I can't hear you. And you're just on your knees. Mercy. In that case, mercy means relenting. It means letting up. It means letting the other person go. To show mercy is to stop causing pain. Guys, don't get any ideas about mercy, unless you want to bring it on. But you know what? Mercy is more subtle than that, too. To show mercy is to stop putting ourselves above others, or to stop separating ourselves from others. To be people of mercy, we've got to start building bridges instead of building fences. It means we have to stop separating ourselves from people who are not like us. I was talking to Jaron about this earlier this week, and he had a great point. He said, Jesus showed us mercy when he entered our ugliness. So when Jesus stepped into this world and lived among us, he embraced all of our selfishness, our pride, our sin, our ugliness. He stepped into it and he embraced it. So to show mercy, to be people of mercy, we've got to be willing to step into the ugliness of people's lives instead of running from it. But you know what? Mercy is still more than that. The Good Samaritan in the Bible, I imagine you remember that story, but the Good Samaritan showed mercy when he goes out of his way to bring wholeness to someone in pain. He chooses literally to put himself out for somebody else. He does the hard thing, the time-consuming thing, and frankly, the expensive thing, to care for somebody in need, to help somebody escape their position on the margins, on the outside. So mercy is to stop causing pain and separation and to start doing the things that bring health and wholeness. Now, it's important to note there's a difference between mercy and forgiveness. We're not really talking about forgiveness. Mercy is more about the way we make people feel, frankly. So when favoritism shoves someone out to the margins of life, the margins of society, outside of the circle, whatever our circle is, favoritism shoves them there. Mercy invites them back in. James says, "Judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. But mercy triumphs over judgment." You know what was amazingly unique about the early church? It was one of the first places in the history of the world where rich and poor, men and women, servants and masters, all gathered together in one place as equals. The early church was the first place because Jesus broke down those barriers. That's mercy. And that was one of those just incredibly winsome things about the church. That's why, in a lot of ways, it exploded in those first few centuries, because this was a place like no other. This was a community like no other. The hard part is to then admit that the church community today rarely looks like that. So I think it's important to ask a couple of key questions, the hard implications of this passage. And the first thing is, I want to ask, is there a difference between intentional neglect, intentional favoritism, intentional judging, and consequential favoritism? Here's what I mean. I don't think very many of us do this on purpose, show favoritism. But I do think, if we're willing to be honest, that we regularly make decisions that have a consequence of separating us from other people. They have a consequence of making people feel like they are on the outside looking in. The consequence is that we don't put ourselves in a place to actually be able to show the same level of interest, support, and care towards people who aren't like us. We can't, because we separate ourselves from them. So I think maybe another way of saying this, another way of making James' point is, don't intentionally neglect the poor, but even more, go out of your way to embrace those who aren't like you. We said this last week, might say it again next week. This doesn't happen by accident. We've got to do it on purpose. I think James' words have a really special significance to the church. If there's any place on the planet that ought to be the least likely to show favoritism, shouldn't it be this time? Shouldn't it be us? those of us who have had the barriers between us and God removed by the blood of Jesus, shouldn't we be the most accepting and embracing people in the world? But if we're honest, if you look at statistics on church membership, I'm sure you're well aware of this. Sunday morning is one of the most segregated hours in our country. Segregated in every sense of the word. Race, socioeconomic status, geographically. We gather together on Sunday with people who are just like us. Now again, that's not intentionally excluding people. But there's an interesting consequence there. One of the lessons I learned in seminary when you're preparing sermons, put yourselves in somebody else's shoes. How would your sermon sound to insert person who's different than you? How would it sound? So I'd like to ask that question as a church. How does this worship service feel to a single mom with four rowdy kids? How would it feel for her to come be a part of this? How would it feel for a poor person with shabby clothes to walk in here on a Sunday morning? How would it feel for a young black man from North Champaign to walk in here? Again, I don't think we're doing anything on purpose, but if we are doing something that makes somebody feel like they are not welcome, like they are on the outside, are we not showing favoritism? If we arrange our worship, our space, even ourselves, in a way that makes somebody feel like they don't belong, I think the warning of James falls on our shoulders. Now, let me say this. I think we're making great strides in this area. To be honest with you, this is one of the reasons why I don't want to take up the offering every week, because I don't want people to feel like we care about you for your money. We want you to know we care about you because you're valuable. We want you to feel included in this circle. It's one of the reasons why we want to have a casual worship space and time. We don't want you to feel like you've got to dress up. So go ahead, untuck if you want, wear shorts, please. Not that there's anything wrong with dressing up, but the problem happens when we make people feel like they are on the outside looking in. That's one of the reasons why you won't hear us use a lot of big theological words like sanctification or condemnation or justification or predestination. That almost had like poetry to it. It's not that those concepts aren't important. They are. But we can talk about those things using the language that other people use, people who aren't like us, in order to not show favoritism and help them feel welcomed. So I want to ask you a favor. Help us make this a place that doesn't exclude. If you see some part of our life together as a church community that makes others feel like they are excluded and on the outside, let us know and let's address that. Let's live in the call that God gave us to break down barriers instead of building barriers. Tim Bourne has this yearning desire to dress up as a homeless guy and come into church and see how it makes us feel. Would we welcome him? So you'll have to look real close to see if it's Tim. But I would love to be a place where anybody is welcome. I think that would be great. If you haven't been here before when we do what we're about to do, this may be slightly uncomfortable for you, so feel free to get some coffee or go to the bathroom, but we're going to divide up into small groups right now and discuss a little bit. The reason we're doing this is we want to give you a chance to take home a little bit of what we're talking about. If you want to just get together with your family, that's fine. If you're kind of that more loner type person and want to get together with yourself, that's okay. But other than that, I'd really encourage you to get together with three or four people, and we're going to put three questions up on the screen that we'd love you to talk about. What do you think of the comparison between favoritism or judgment and mercy? Where have you seen favoritism in the workplace or neighborhood or family or school? And what are some ways that you can be an agent of mercy? Go ahead and circle up. I'm going to call you back together in about 4 minutes or five. Go. So back to the story about my buddy on his youth group ski trip. He told me that he got back on the bus like a little puppy dog with his tail between his legs, and he found a seat by himself, and he sat down and pouted for a few minutes. And then he got up, and he started looking for another kid that was sitting in a seat by himself. You know what? I want to encourage you to try to remember that story, to try to remember mercy. Whenever you walk into a room and you see a shy person, you know, standing off by themselves, try to remember that story the next time you're in a group of people and you're drawn naturally to the most attractive, the most outgoing, the most fun. Remember the ones who aren't like that. Hope you'll remember that story when you're sitting at your desk at work or at school, and you look around the room and you know the kids that are on the outside looking in, or the coworkers who don't quite fit in. Hope you'll remember that story the next time you walk in this room on a Sunday morning and see somebody sitting by themselves. Mercy triumphs over judgment. We were made to show the world a different way. We were made to be a community where the last are first, and the first are last. We were made to be a community that values every life intentionally and bends over backwards for the person who can offer us nothing in return. We were made to be people of mercy. In just a moment, we're going to have the ushers come and collect the offerings. But I want to introduce a concept to you. You're going to hear us start talking about take home. What's your take home? What's the thing that you're going to walk out of here and take home with you? What's the point, the idea, the value? What's your take home? This next song is not a song that we want you to sing along to, right? You can if you want. But while Jaron and this is Jaron's wife, Catherine, by the way. Hey, Catherine. While they're singing, I want to encourage you to ponder that question a little bit. What's your take home?